What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Solomon Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Michael Shapiro, who covers the Rockets and Astros for the Houston Chronicle. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So the Rockets have played three games, one against Orlando, one against San Antonio, one against Golden State, and they've lost all three of them. They're currently 0-3 right now. This is my least favorite part of the season because I don't quite know what's real and what's fake yet. Like, I'll watch all the games. I'll rewatch them. Then I'll look at the possessions that I care about on Synergy. I'll comb through the data, all that stuff. But what I will not do this year, what I refuse to do, is publicize the numbers that I'm looking at this early into the season. In my opinion, the sample size is way too small until we get to the 15 to 20 game mark. I say this every year. This year I'm going to make a point of not using them. I actually asked you today, Michael, to not use them for our exercise today. But when you get to around game 15, I think it's totally fair to start publicizing the numbers, right, that you're looking at. Because that's when I feel like the sample size is large enough. That's when the data people tell me, okay, this is like when stuff starts to get real. So what Michael and I are going to do today is we're going to come up with five early season observations about the Houston Rockets. And the only rule for this exercise is we're not going to use numbers to exercise or points to, you know, punctuate anything. We're just going to go straight observations. So I've asked Michael to come up with five observations. I've come up with five of my own, and we're just going to go back and forth with it. If there's overlap, Michael, feel free to cut me off and say, I had this one too, and I'll do the same thing for you. So I want to go first because, frankly, I don't want you to take this one. Observation number one. Alperen Şengün is the best player on the team, and it's not even close. Like, maybe you could make a case for Fred VanVleet being just as impactful, but in terms of just pure talent, I'm done pretending like this guy hasn't been the best player on the Rockets these past 3 years. Like, I'm done. Like, that conversation ends today, and it only starts back up when someone comes and takes the throne from him, in my opinion. He's the most efficient scorer on the team. He's the best rebounder. He's the best passer. And defensively, he's not great, but he's fine. He's just that guy. Like, full stop, he's just that guy. And finally, we have a coaching staff in Houston that's recognizing this and properly adjusting to it, in my opinion, on the fly. I don't think Ime Udoka came in here with the highest expectations for Alperen Şengün, but through that Spurs game, he started tweaking the offense to go more through Şengün, and then he started adjusting rotations so that Şengün stays in longer, to end the game. And again, we're not using numbers today, and I haven't looked them up. But if I were to guess, I would say Şengün's probably top four in minutes and usage for the team. If I were to guess off top of head. His usage has to be at least 2 to 3 percentage points higher. Again, we are not going to look him up. I would guess. Like, I just from the eye test, it looks like he is getting used a lot more than he was last year in the offense. And I said it on a previous podcast with Josh Lloyd of the Locked On Network. Ime Udoka obviously came in here with biases for all these players, like, because he's human. That's natural. And I said that wasn't, you know, the issue with me, but he striked me as a straight shooter. And we really saw examples of that in the Spurs and Warriors game where Houston was playing through Şengün and doing so with a purpose. This debate about whether or not this kid is real is over, in my opinion. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not. The folks that were denying Şengün's talent and trying to poke holes in it these past 2 years, especially the folks who are still doing so, you guys are just behaving delusionally. Like, you're just not watching the games. You're not looking at the numbers. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing when you're analyzing basketball. You're living on a different planet than the rest of us. Like, and it's almost like people were trying to gaslight the rest of us into believing that Şengün wasn't as special as what he appears to be. That stops today. I'm done paying attention to it. You guys can go yell at clouds for all I care. I don't know why people who claim to be diehard Rockets fans were so against the idea that Şengün was as good as he is, but you guys look foolish right now, and most Rockets fans who are watching these games are done listening to you. We are. This is the guy. This is the best young player on the team. He's the one with the most promising upside right now, and he's the one that organizationally they should prioritize above all else. No offense to Jabari. No offense to Jalen. Şengün's just better right now. He just is, and By not signing with the Rockets this summer, Brook Lopez did the organization the biggest favor he could have done. He helped them see the light. He helped them see Alperen Şengün.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I didn't want to cut you off as you were kind of rolling on your point here, but that's kind of my first point, said a little less forcefully. But I think Şengün as the hub of the offense is the offense at its best, I think, through three games, right? I think when things got kind of muddy offensively in the San Antonio game, you saw Alperen and Fred VanVleet two-man game. Last game against Golden State, it was a lot of Alperen and Jalen. Him acting as kind of the hub, often from the high post around that foul line, and then in that two-man game with the guards, it's really seeming to be, at least right now, the most efficient, the smoothest of what is right now kind of like a sticky offense, I would say. It's not totally smooth, a lot of late shot clock possessions, but right now, like, either as a roller, as a pick and pop, whether he's rolling hard to the rim or doing the kind of short roll, which I really like, it's where he operates, I think, at his best. The offense is just so smooth right now when they're involving Alperen and or running possessions through him. Like you said, it was the most efficient offense they had last year. It was often the most efficient offense they had during his rookie year, using him in the pick and roll, using him as a post-up option. I don't think he's going to get like spam-fed post-up possessions, because that's not how Ime Udoka or the offense or the Rockets talent is really going to work. But he's going to log plenty of touches. I think he will finish near the top, if not the top of their usage. And I think really importantly, what you said, it's like you can see that Ime Udoka already believes in Alperen, understands the talent he has at hand. And it's not like, you know, not to take shots at Steven Silas or anything, but it seemed to be such a push and pull last year, right? That was strange. With Ime, it seems like he's already kind of leaning into Alperen's talents, especially when, you know, they need buckets in the second half. So the offense hasn't been great, and we'll kind of hit on that, I think, next or later. But with Alperen, that's really where it's most effective right now.
Yeah, and, like, I think, you know, the point you raised about they're not just going to spam feed him post-ups, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I said this on, I think, the last episode. If they were going to start the season with just, like, using him as a dribble handoff guy and in possessions, I was not worried that he was going to get, like, I saw a lot of people on Twitter during the preseason being like, okay, so he's just not going to be emphasized in the offense. He's going to kind of get belittled again. I'm like, no, as long as they're using him, they'll find out how good he is. Great players, they find a way to whatever, even if you pigeonhole them or if you put them in a specific role, as long as you're involving them in the offense, they're going to excel at it, and they're going to force the conversation, right? And that's what Şengün did. He was in that kind of dribble handoff role to start the season, in the preseason, and slowly but surely he was scoring. He was scoring pick and roll. He was scoring. Okay, now we're giving him post-ups. He's still scoring. And, like, that's what happens. Like, you prove it in one area, you're going to get the ball again in these other areas. And that's why I'm not concerned about it. As long as you're giving him a fair shake, which I think the Rockets have done, I think – like, I'm not concerned about him, like, oh, falling down the chart here in terms of shot attempts, touches, whatever. Like, and you know what I like? You know, you mentioned the push and pull with Steven Silas last year in the offense with Şengün. I noticed that rookie year Şengün, that happy-go-lucky Şengün where he would just get the ball and make what he deemed to be the right play every time, right? Whatever he deemed to be the right play. Sometimes it resulted in a turnover. Sometimes it resulted in a made basket for himself or somebody else. That Şengün seemed to fade a little bit last year. He seemed to get the ball and try to score right away. Like, he felt like an internal pressure. Like, if I don't score right now and prove myself, I'm not going to get the ball again. Like, I feel like his confidence was kind of messed with. Right, like, I feel like whatever the Rockets were doing last year took Şengün out of the natural elements of his game, which a lot of it is passing. His assist percentage last year was down from his rookie year, and it was because every time he would get the ball, it was this dump off pass to end a possession. It was like the shot clock's running out. Let's give it to Şengün. I'm gonna push something. I'm gonna rush a shot. I gotta prove myself. This is the only way I seem to be able to prove myself in the NBA is to score points. So I'm gonna go do that instead of just playing my game, which is everything, right? He does everything, and you saw it in FIBA, right? FIBA Şengün is so different than NBA Şengün, and it's because he has that freedom to do whatever the hell he wants. Right, And that's what I like about this, man. Like, we're starting to see that again. We're starting to see, like, the quick touch passes back. We're starting to see the fadeaway jumpers back. We're starting to see, like, all the funky stuff that he has in his game. That's all starting to come back.
Yeah, I mean, he had a beautiful touch pass the other night into Jabari in the lane for a little 6-7 footer, and he kind of just barely tapped it right back to him. I think another thing, you know, Ime even said today when meeting with the media, we didn't have many Alperen post-ups, if any, in the preseason. Now we're starting to dole that out a little more, right? Yeah. I think ultimately the Rockets will end up with a situation where I think they're going to have 3-4-plus guys with, say, 15% or more usage at the end of the year. And I think that's kind of a healthy situation. And I think, you know, with Alperen, he is going to be a healthy part of that. And I think kind of the easiest way to kind of an egalitarian move the ball attack through Fred and through Alperen. I mean, those guys are going to make the right play. They're going to keep the ball moving. They're not going to have the kind of stagnancy issues. And so, like I said, you know, having those two guys specifically, I think, anchor the offense, and then also with spurts of Jalen plus Alperen, it just seems like it'll be the most effective path to points for this team.
Yeah. What's your first observation?
Those first, you know, Şengün as the offensive hub is its best. So let's move on, I guess. Let's kind of go to a little bit of more negative or concerning aspect. I think the bench, especially without Tari Eason, is really going to struggle to score. And I think really the offense writ large does have some concerns. Let's start more narrowly with the bench. I think Sunday night, there was a lineup where we had Amen, Jeff Green in there as well. I also think Reggie Bullock was in there as well. There are some units that really are going to struggle for both spacing, burst. Eason is that kind of guy that I think really helps hold those lineups together. Obviously, no Kevin Porter Jr. is just another ball handler and scoring option. It just feels like writ large, like this roster and the bench, especially with Eason out, is one or two bodies short. Landell is out as well, although he had kind of a rough preseason as it is. So when these starters go off the floor, when Alperen goes off the floor and Fred also goes off the floor, we're seeing some real struggles to score. And I think especially in these first weeks, that's going to be a continued concern for this group.
Yeah, that was one of my observations. Like, Houston's bench badly needs more juice. I haven't looked at the numbers yet, but going off the eye test, I guarantee you there's probably a rough fall off from, like, when the bench units come in on offense. The bench stinks right now, and Udoka has not been great about staggering Fred VanVleet and Şengün. When those two go to the bench at the same time, the offense grows stagnant and unorganized. It's gotten better since the end of that Spurs game. You can tell he's kind of recalibrating for how good Şengün has been on the fly, right? But Houston needs at least one of VanVleet or Şengün on the floor at all times. As you said, Amen Thompson, as good as he's looked at times, is not good enough to be carrying second unit offenses right now. He needs help. And when that happens, like when you're – bench offense is that bad, you have three options. One, you stagger your best offensive players. Two, you either go out and find someone on the trade market, or, you know, three, you extend your rotation to someone who's not playing, right? And you can't trade for someone until January because you just acquired Oladipo's contract and you can't aggregate that salary with other contracts yet. So if you're trying to go get someone significant, you can't do that till January. Udoka seems resistant to kind of extending the rotation. We'll talk about one guy who I think should be playing in a bit. And, you know, then you're just kind of left with option A. You know, if you're not going to extend the rotation and you can't make a trade right now, you have to kind of go with that stagger of your two best offensive players. And I think that will kind of get the ball rolling a little bit. I think you saw a lot of it in that Golden State game. The substitution pattern was changing, actually, in that game. And I think that again, that's a reaction to, like, okay, we need someone, one of these two dudes, to stay on the floor at all times. And that's wise.
Yeah, you know, kind of a mini point here. You know, you kind of mentioned with the men, like, I kind of feel long term, if we're looking to 2026, 27, 28, I kind of want to remain the high man on Amen Thompson's ability, his projection. I think he's so smart. I think that he's already confident as a shooter. I think his athletic abilities will be harnessed. With him right now, no one's respecting the shot fairly enough. He's not necessarily making enough, you know, second read plays or doing things that are past the first read and kind of the main ball handler situations. But I will say, kind of encouragingly, one or two things will happen per stint on the floor where I'm like, oh, like, he's flashing, he's popping. He hit a catch and shoot three early in the game against Golden State. Even more impressively, he kind of burst into the lane, stopped on a dime, and hit kind of that mid jumper, which I think is going to become a big thing for him. So right now he's not ready. Of course, he played in overtime elite last year, but you're seeing some flashes. So that's just kind of a mini point I wanted to make with the bench here.
No, I agree. And, you know, we're 2 for 2 on the overlap. I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah, sure.
This kind of ties into my last observation. I think Cam Whitmore should be playing more. I don't know why he isn't right now. Udoka is basically running an 8-man rotation with Easton and Lonsdale out. Lonsdale's coming back, so maybe, you know, maybe Whitmore doesn't even get the opportunity. But I'm generally in favor of actually short rotations. I think long rotations are generally flawed. You don't get the best opportunities for like your top end guys, and you're kind of not doing your lower end guys any favors by playing them like 15 minutes a game. But I think he really should extend this rotation to like 9. He needs more juice. He's leaning on these starters far too much right now. I'm not sure how much Whitmore could possibly make these bench units worse. Like, at the very least, he gives you some positional versatility at the wing until Easton comes back from his injury. And at best, like, he gives you some real athleticism, some real, like, make stuff happen when there isn't stuff happening, right? Like, that happens a lot with Whitmore. He's just an instinctual player, and because he's so strong, because he's so athletic, he can make stuff happen kind of improvisationally, right? And I think that kind of stuff would help their second unit. We'll see how much Lonsdale helps, but I think even after they get Lonsdale back, I think extending it to Whitmore, you know, just because he's not going to get another opportunity to play once Easton's back, right? Like, this is really, if you're going to get him some regular season run, this is the time.
Yeah, I think two things can be true here. I think one, it could be useful to put him out, see if he can juice that second unit. Two, I feel at least pretty guaranteed, or at least I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't spend time in Rio Grande Valley this year. Yeah. I think you saw a lot of athleticism in the preseason and summer league. I think there are going to be a lot of turnovers. There are going to be a lot of missed 2-point jumpers, a lot of early shot clock jumpers. But you make a fair point, like looking at this Golden State minutes log, Jeff Green, Amen, and Jay Shante all logging over 20 minutes. None of those were, although Tate was pretty solid. Jeff and Amen struggled out there. I'm not going to kill Udoka for it. I'm not necessarily sure that Cam would be ready to play, but also you make a fair point. You know, this is the time to have him run. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he got into the game in one of these next two contests against Charlotte and then one of these next two against Sacramento. I could see that.
Yeah, and maybe he's priming Whitmore to, like, hey, this is kind of what it's going to be this whole year, right? Like, you're kind of have to – maybe that's the idea. But, like, I kind of think, like, you have to roll with the punches a little bit in the regular season. Like, once you get dealt a hand like this, you know, you start with two rotations out, you kind of have to adjust a little bit, maybe, you know, divert from your plans and then go back to it later, right? Like, once you get the guys back in, once you get your horses, you know, you can go back to, you know, what the original plan was, which is probably playing Whitmore with the Vipers and getting him his development there. He's young. It doesn't really matter if he spends his first year with the Vipers. I think actually can help him because he'll play like 30 plus minutes a game over there. Whereas over here, he's going to play like 10 or 15 minutes a game, if any. But for now, I mean, there's a real 20 minute window he can sneak in here. You know, like I think especially with Easton, like Easton's due back in what, 2 weeks now? Why not? Just see what you got. See what you got. I think. I know they're focused on winning. I know that's their kind of goal, but I mean, this kind of helps both, right? It helps the development and it kind of helps, kind of shore up some lost rotation minutes, but it is what it is. If he's going to choose not to, if he doesn't want to go there, I get it, but I kind of think it would be helpful. Michael, what's your next point?
Yeah, sure. Let's kind of take from, that kind of narrow focus to something more broad. I like the emotional leadership. I think there's strong emotional leadership with this group. And let me kind of explain what I mean by that. Ime Udoka, I think, drives John Twadits, of course, across the league the other night from Draymond Green and Chris Paul and Steve Kerr, and from his own players. And why I think he is a guy that is direct. He's a guy that's fair. He's a guy that has been there before as a player. And it just seems that his tenor and his manners aren't any kind of got the respect of the room. I think, moreover, two veterans that he has kind of tabbed or brought in as leaders of this group, I think, are as such. I think Fred, of course, is renowned as that. And after Golden State, where he played terribly, he said, don't know if I can curse or anything. He said, I was shit, you know, essentially. He kind of took ownership, said how he had to be better. He's a very even-keeled leader, which I think is important for this group. And then Dylan Brooks, which I think you can laugh at me. People can think this is absurd, but it was true in Memphis. Like, this is a guy who is a proven veteran, has worked himself from kind of an underdog into a prominent place in the league, is an elite defender, has elite habits, and takes accountability in a way where Fred is a little more, we're going to stay the course. He brings a little urgency, what this group needs, you know, how they need to fight through early struggles, right? So I think these kind of two veterans plus Ime, there are going to be struggles. Like, this roster lacks top-end talent, lacks some depth, right? But I think, like, last year things kind of really spiraled off course amid losing. I don't think that's the case here. I think things feel more stable, and that's why I kind of think that even amid a rough schedule, it's not like things are going to totally spiral like they did last season.
It sounds crazy right now, but I do think they've gotten better. Like, it sounds crazy to 100%. Say they're 0-3 right now, but, like, even moments where, like, that Spurs game where it's like, okay, they're letting go of the rope here, classic last year's Rockets, and then Fred VanVleet just goes to the basket relentlessly, multiple possessions in a row, keeps them in the game. Şengün, confident Şengün, keeps them in the game. Like, they're not letting go of that rope, right? Like, that's a different mentality from this team. And you see that veteran leadership just project across that whole team, right? That whole team takes after Ime Udoka. What did Don Brooks say about Victor Wembanyama? He's just tall.
He's tall.
Yeah. He's tall. I love that guy. Yeah, it's but
great.
I mean,
it's great.
No, like I think that kind of chip on your shoulder mentality rubs off on the rookies, on the young guys, and it helps them play with a little bit of an edge. Play like they can be in any game. This is like the Golden State Warriors, the four-time champions, the guys who they won the title 2 years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. And they were not afraid. Right. They led for the majority of that game. Steph goes off and they lose the game. So what? You were in it. Right. You had a chance to win that game. And that's really impressive. You know, I think Ime probably marks, he's not going to say it. Right. I think he probably marks that down as a good loss. Right. Like, that's like a loss that it's different from the losses we had last year. They play Golden State last year. They're losing by 30 points. Right, that you know, Rocket squad didn't have this level of confidence, didn't have this chip on their shoulder, right? Didn't feel like they can be in games with teams like this, but this Rockets team does.
I think there's a real connectivity to the defense that you're seeing, where last year, I mean, you would see guys just getting lost in transition, 3-point shooters just wide open, and there was no communication. This year's group has that kind of you know, accountability. One more thing that I think, you know, it's a small thing, but something I noticed even on Sunday, late in the fourth quarter, Alperen kind of blows a switch on that first Curry three, right? Udoka takes a timeout. And last year and in the Silas era, Silas timeout, okay? He goes and meets with his assistants. The guy sit on the bench, right? This time, Udoka takes the timeout. He's talking to his whole starting five and then Fred and Alperen the whole time. Right. And, you know, maybe that's me not necessarily being so informed as what's going on in those assistant huddles, but there's a level of like accountability and one-on-one literal teaching there that I think is like actually important, I think, for these young players. And I think for a unit that's starting to come together. So it's small things like that where I think, again, you know, they have a hard schedule coming up. They have somewhat of a talent deficit. I think we're still going to see a more respectable brand of basketball. I know that might be a low bar or whatever. It is crossing the bar we've seen in previous seasons. So there is that.
That personal touch to coaching is really important. Like, I think it's not to say that those tactician type coaches, right? Those guys do make the timeout and huddle with the assistants, right? Like, not to say that those guys don't have a place in the league, right? Like, I was a big proponent for Nick Nurse, and he's a guy like this, right? Like, it's not to say that those guys don't have a place in the league, but the guys who have that kind of emotional leadership style of coaching, I think that does resonate differently with young players. Not necessarily better. You know, it's hard to say what's better, but it does resonate differently, right? It's more poignant versus that, hey, we're going to treat these guys like adults. We're going to find a strategic way to kind of get around this versus let's just talk to the guys.
Right. You know, it's a developing group, right? And I think having that hands-on development of such group is important. So we can go to your next point, but thought it was interesting.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. So I hate to go negative after that positive point, but they are 0-3. We need to have a serious conversation about Jalen and Jabari's defense. Like, they look terrible right now defensively, and I'm not as concerned about the shooting percentages again because we're like three games in. Some of that is naturally going to tick up, but the perimeter defense, specifically the one-on-one defense from these two, is kind of jarring, especially Jabari, because his best two attributes as a prospect coming into the NBA were the jump shot and that he could virtually guard anybody, and made him a super switchable big theoretically. And if both those things don't come around, what is he functionally providing right now? Right, it's really rough, right? And what's really going in his favor right now is who's going to start over him, right? Like, Tari Eason's out, right? Like, he should thank his lucky stars that Tari Eason is out. If Ime is being as straight, if he's going to be a straight shooter this whole season, like, Tari might threaten for that spot. Right, but he has a couple weeks to get his stuff together. So let's see if he does. Right now, it's very concerning. And Şengün is having to make up for both of those two for their mistakes. And I've said on the podcast before, I think he's fine defensively, but he's not great, and he's not going to make up for multiple, weaknesses on the perimeter. And he's just not equipped to do that. Right, that's not what he was ever touted to do coming into the NBA. They've just got to be better. They do, especially with Eason and Londale both out. Londale's coming back, but still, they still have to be better. Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, and Jayshon Tate can't do it all, especially Tate. He only plays 25 minutes per game right now. Jabari, if he's going to continue to start, he needs to step up. He really does. His man is just beating him far too consistently. He's too theoretical of a player right now for me, for my taste. But like, even taking that all out, right? Like, let's isolate the defense right now, right? Because again, the jump shot could come around. It could come around, and that's why it's kind of stupid to talk about the percentages. But the defense, like, that's that's going to be the same, right? Like, that even 10-15 games into the season, that's probably going to be the same if he doesn't step it up real soon. So I'm really interested to see if both those guys can turn around. Jalen, listen, like, he's made strides in his offensive game, like real strides, right? Like, I've talked about it, the passing, the ball handling, the strength, right? Like, he's getting to the free throw line. Like, he's made real strides as an offensive basketball player. I'm not concerned about him offensively. I know a lot of people are right now. I'm not. I think a lot of this stuff is going to come around. But man, you gotta get better defensively. He has not gotten better defensively since he's come into the league, like, at all. And that needs to be something that the coaching staff hammers home in these films. We got a two-day break. They've got to hammer that down.
Yeah, Jalen, he's getting caught, on the weak side. Guys going backdoor on him, stuff like that, which is usual concerns. I don't think it's really worth delving too far into that. He just hasn't progressed. With Jabari, I think it is kind of an interesting conversation. I'll make one encouraging note before kind of the broader point. He's been pretty effective wiggling around screens, which I think is something that we saw on Sunday against Golden State. He did a pretty good job against Steph. So him as a team defender is improving in that regard. But him as a switchable defender, him as an isolation defender, you hit the nail on the head. I think the way in which he's covering guys laterally is not necessarily the same kind of speed, all enveloping, huge arm, Raptor style kind of defensive wing that people really expected. You saw Franz Wagner on opening night kind of cook him with that kind of side setback. It's an interesting thing where I think the Rockets may alter and adjust their scheme based on how they perceive their personnel to work. Like, for instance, we're not seeing Alperen acting solely as a drop coverage guy this year, right? He's doing a lot more meeting the guy at the level, they're kind of hedging stuff. And so they might not automatically switch things with Jabari. Now, on one hand, that might mitigate the problem, so to speak. On the other hand, it's a little telling and a little concerning if he's a guy where, like, we can't automatically switch and feel great about that, right? Because I think that's kind of one of the big things he was billed as. So that was one of my points. I'm a little confused by Jabari Smith early, so I'm happy you brought it up. Just
and,
because
and
his
by the
start.
Way, before you move on, like if Go Sengun's going to be your best offensive player, which right now, again, we both agree that he is. Like to have you have to have someone that makes up for what he isn't defensively, right? Next to him.
No, it's got to be Jabari Smith Jr. I think as the backline defensive anchor and just as the front court defensive anchor. That's what he was billed as when he was drafted. There still seems to be an ability there. I just think the way in which he is able to cover guys on the island, cover guys side to side, laterally especially.
It's very Robert Covington-esque, right? Robert Covington's kind of like this, right? Where it's he's a great help side defender. You get him out on an island, and it can get pretty dicey, right?
It's a concerning comparison, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this in person, right? Like when the Rockets traded Clint Capella for Rocco, and teams were just targeting. I mean, Chris Paul, right? Chris Paul was targeting Rocco on those switches, right? Because he, as good as he is as a you know help defender, when he's one on one on an island, he was not that great, right? This is not a strength of Rocco's, right? And it's why he's not like Rocco is awesome. Right? He found money for the Sixers. What was it, 10 years ago? Whenever he came to the NBA, but it's why he's never been like what Draymond is, what these other, you know, elite defensive wings are in the NBA, OG Anunoby, whatever guy you want to use. He's never been that because of what he is on an island, right? And the hope is that Jabari gets better laterally to where he can be what those guys ended up becoming.
Yeah, and you actually literally stole a point out of my mouth. I want to stress that this is says no. I mean, you're totally fine. I mean, you just make a great point that we should also note, you know, second season for the guy, game three. You know, is he not totally meeting the defensive expectation? Sure. Does that mean he can't do that over the next 70 plus games? Like no. So I think it's just something to watch more than an outright, like, let's put him lower on our assumed hierarchy or let's dismiss his upside, et cetera. It just is something to note. I think on both ends, it's a little shakier than I think we or he had hoped through his first three games, for sure.
Yeah. What's your next observation?
Last one here we got. You know, I've been very impressed by Dylan Brooks. You know, I think we mentioned obviously his kind of emotional leadership, but on the floor on both ends, the highlight that people are only going to see is him getting cooked by Steph Curry. You also don't see the first three quarters where he kind of hounded Curry, was navigating screens incredibly effectively. One thing that's kind of surprised me is he's been, honestly, I think their second best offensive player just over this extended stretch.
No,
he's a very decisive and aggressive driver to the hole. He catches and he goes in a straight line, and he's very strong. He's also pretty unselfish. He had a very nice little dump off when he drove the lane, crowded, hit Alperin for a little, you know, kind of flip bunny. He's just the guy where the shot is going to ebb and flow, and people like will always just read the box score and see his shooting numbers in last year's playoffs, but like the way in which he attacks downhill, makes the simple play, makes the next play, has been very, very, you know, encouraging to see. It's just kind of funny, like the reputation league-wide is so different than when you actually go up and watch a guy. I'm not saying that he's an all-star or anything like that, but he's just such a solid piece on both ends that I've been very impressed.
No, it's always like that, right? Like there's always that discrepancy with guys who are dogged on in the NBA, right? Like when you watch them play, it's like, oh, this guy's good at X, Y, and Z, and you would never know it, right? I mean, he even from three-point range, he's shooting 54% right now in the early season. I mean, he's been, I mean, end-to-end, like getting a rebound and going, baseline to baseline, he's been awesome, right? Finishing specifically, he's been very, very strong. He's got that wide body, the shoulders and strong, and like I think that really aids in like the physical ability to drive the basket like that. You know what it reminds me of? Maybe this is a bad comparison. I kind of think Josh Christopher can become this guy. Like, I kind of think like the best version of Josh Christopher, I think he can become Dylan Brooks. Like, I think defensively, he's very similar, like built. Offensively, he's got some of the same struggles, but he's got some of that same confidence that Dylan Brooks has, right? Say what you want about Josh Christopher. He's a confident fellow, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think some team is gonna snag him or develop him, much like the Grizzlies did with Dylan Brooks, and really make him into that kind of player. But yeah, I mean, I like to listen. I was one of the few guys defending the signing of Dylan Brooks. Among Rockets media, I thought that the contract was fine. Like, I don't think it was great. Like, I don't, but I didn't think it was like disastrous. Like some people were talking about it as, like, it's going to be fine. Like, it's going to age pretty well, considering how good the player is, where the salary cap is going, his contract's declining, right? Like, I think that people were kind of really underestimated the kind of, you know, the kind of asset that the Rockets picked up. And like, here's something to note. Like, the Rockets have Dylan Brooks, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith, and Cam Whitmore all on the roster. If they didn't have Dylan Brooks, they lose some leverage in some of these negotiations, right? Like, because some of these guys are going to come up for pay pretty soon, right? Like, Tari Eason, we're going to have to start having that conversation next year, right? Same thing with Jabari next year, right? In terms of extensions, in terms of, like, restricted free agency, that's going to come up in 2 years. But, like, the Rockets have the negotiating chip that we can just walk away, right? Because we have this guy on our wings locked in for a long time, for 4 years. Like, that's something they could say, right? Like, if you, like, chances are you're not going to keep all these guys, right? Like, with the rising cap, the new CBA, you have to be very particular about who you pick and choose, right? And sometimes you have to be able to let guys go in favor of more prudent options. And as people may not like to hear it, like, Dylan Brooks might be one of your prudent options if you have to walk away from the negotiating table with one of these guys.
Yeah, and I think just writ large, like the summer salary panic that all, you know, often hits when these deals are first announced, you got to take into a greater concept where the Rockets wanted to replace their below average players with good players, and they did so with Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet. They had a lot of cap space that had to go somewhere. They did that with Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet. It's not like they don't have future flexibility. And ultimately, like, the goal of the organization, right, this year was to return to some form of respectability. I think that the win total might, you know, hover closer to 30 than 35 even. But I think in terms of returning this roster to respectability, I think that is something that will actually happen. I think building upon that towards the future steps, like, we'll talk about that maybe on a later podcast, that's more of kind of that long-term issue. But I think through three games, it's not like 0-3, let's hit the panic button. I think we've seen some impressive things. There are some holes still on the roster, but writ large, it's just a much stronger and more together and more competitive group than we saw last season.
Last observation for me.
Please.
This team still sucks at shooting, at least through three games. And, you know, a lot, part of this could be just shooting luck, but they can't hit a three in the ocean right now. This is where, listen, like, we got to be very sensitive about this. This is where KPJ's loss feels kind of great, because he was a very good off ball shooter. And I'm not saying the Rockets didn't do the right thing. Obviously they did. They did the right thing. But even his purported replacement in Reggie Bullock is barely playing right now, right? Aaron Holiday is out of the rotation completely. Those are two guys that could really help them from a shooting perspective, and I get why Ime is hesitant to play those guys. But again, I don't know why these guys could hurt right now. You know what I mean? Like, I think in a lot of areas they need some offensive juice. Shooting is one of them, and they're probably going to have to, like, more likely – have to flip Oladipo and perhaps another piece and go into the trade deadline and find their guy, right? Find someone that's going to soak up 30 minutes per game, whether that's Malcolm Brogdon, whether that's X, Y, or Z player, right? Somebody who's going to be a bench player that's nice and reliable as a three-point shooter, decent defensively, and probably signed to more than 1 year because you don't want to trade assets for an expiring contract. But that's going to be very interesting to see what they intend to do about this, right? Because there's a hole. I feel it. You feel it. I think the Rockets feel it. There's a hole here. Like, they're in that rotation. They need one more solid guy. Even if Tari Eason comes back, they're still going to need one more solid guy. Specifically from a ball handling and a shooting perspective, they're going to need someone there to really, shore up what they're lacking if they're going to be a competitive team this year, which they keep on indicating that that's their goal.
Yeah, I mean, kind of simply enough, like you look at their top minutes earners, like how many of those guys are plus or plus plus shooters? Are any of those guys in the starting five really strong 3-point shooters or plus
Probably
plus?
VanVleet. Yeah, that's it.
Probably, although percentage wise, last year would suggest kind of otherwise, or at least he's good, not great. And also by volume, they just the profiles of even Jalen, Alperen, even Fred is a little more 3-point heavy, I would say, and he's kind of very valuable in that regard. Dylan, it's not guys that the Rockets aren't going to lead the league or even I think be in the top half in the league in attempts in terms of 3-point shooting, which is kind of a difference than you saw from Udoka's squad in Boston. So maybe that shot profile will change, but there's just not a lot of plus shooters overall. And they're not going to take a bunch of threes, and I think it's going to really zap their offense. I think that's a very fair concern.
Yeah, it's going to be something like, the paints, the teams are going to claw all this paint off, right? Like
100%.
if you can't be a threat from out there, even during the regular season. I know that people talk about that as if it's a postseason thing. It happens in the regular season. You're trying to get wins in the regular season too, right? Like so that's going to be a thing on the scouting report for a lot of these guys. Dylan Brooks, sag off. Fred VanVleet, they're not going to sag off him. That's the one guy. But if Jabari doesn't turn around, sag off, right? Go under the screen. All these guys go under the screen, right? And if they're going to keep going under screens, man, like it's going to be very difficult to score. So yeah, I listen. Like I sympathize with their situation, but they need to go out and find some help quick because the league isn't going to sympathize with their situation. They're trying to get wins too. The Western Conference is going to be a bloodbath. And you got teams that are competitive in terms of offers for the guys they're going to be trading for. Like the Sixers just went out and got multiple first round picks, and they seem to be wanting to upgrade their roster this season. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a competitive marketplace. Every team wants to win this year, seemingly. Even the Spurs are trying to be competitive, right? Like it's going to be tough for a lot of these teams, but like there's an incentive for all these teams to be good because this upcoming draft seems to be, pardon my language, dog. I mean, like, so there's not much incentive up top. So I think the Rockets have to really they're walking a really tough line here, right? And I sympathize with them, but it's going to be very interesting to see what they end up doing in January and February when it's time to fill these holes.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you kind of look at the competition in the West, and it's like I feel like the Rockets this summer pursued a course that was smart and prudent and not reckless at all, and did what they could to improve the roster. You look at the rest of the teams, not sure. Unless we see some big leaps, it is going to be enough to really juice them toward any sort of playoff competition. Anything more than, high 20s,
So,
low 30s, we throw a parade. So, that's kind of how we're dealing with it right now.
I'm gonna read their next 10 days or their next five games, and
Yeah.
you tell me the where the first win comes and what you think the record's gonna be in these next five games.
Yeah, sure.
Hornets, Kings, Lakers, Pelicans. What's the record? Where's the first win?
I think they will take care of business as much as an 0-3 team can take care of business. I think they'll beat Charlotte on Wednesday night, couple of days off. They do play better at home. I think that, as we said, leaning more into Alperen, and I think will be smart. Now, that's not any guarantee. Charlotte has some talent. I really like their big center, Mark Williams. Him
Mark
against, I
Williams,
think,
really good.
Alperen. Yeah,
Yeah.
I think that against Alperen is kind of a matchup to watch. Over that stretch, maybe they'll also snag one off Sacramento with no De'Aaron Fox. Domantas Sabonis is also kind of taken it to Alperen a little bit in previous matchups, which is not necessarily a shame, but it's something to note. But I think even when you look further through like the rest of November, it's not an easy slate. So I think that's a thing. It's like, is it the same old Rockets if the record is the same old Rockets? I don't even know if that's necessarily true. But I think discerning between that, I think, is going to be a key thing through these next, month or 2 months. And, with Udoka in Boston, it got worse before it got better. That team was a lot more talented. But this could be a situation where we're not seeing tangible win progress for a little more longer than people had hoped.
Brandon Miller looks good, by the way. He looks
Yeah, he
really
does.
good right
Very,
now.
very impressive. Yeah. Shows what, summer league results really tell you, right?
Yeah, shutting a lot of people up, I would say. I'm rooting for the kid, man. Like, he got a lot of hate when the Hornets selected him where they did. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily endorsing that pick, but I think, you know, he's a really good player. I mean, he was going to be a top four pick no matter what, and he's showing why. So, yeah, I would agree. I think they have a decent chance here against Charlotte. I think the Kings, this back-to-back against the Kings is going to be tough. I actually think they have a decent chance against this Lakers team because they're really competitive against the Lakers for some reason.
They play the Lakers well, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's because they're, that's an older team, and this is a younger team, more springy, catches them off guard a little bit. I think that's probably a game to watch.
And Halpern eats against them.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. He does. Mm-hmm. Jalen, too. Jalen has some good games against them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll say 2 and 3. I'll say 2 and 3. I think they either win one of those Kings games or that Lakers game. Like I would say they win Charlotte, and I say they win one of the game on November 6th or the game on November 8th. So the Kings game or the Lakers game, one of those two. Both, all these games are at home, by the way. So if you're gonna get a win, now's the time. Yes. Now's the time.
What? A lot of home ones coming up. I think that November 10 is the in-season tournament open, which Rockets players didn't seem all too excited about. Maybe we'll talk about that at a later date, but you can kind of get excited for an alternate court. How fun.
Yeah, nice. Listen, I'm very pro in-season tournament. Great. I'm very pro. Like it's as prestigious as you want to make it, and I want to make it prestigious.
Nice.
You know?
It's a nice sentiment.
Can't
hurt, you know? Can't hurt.
I mean, when this thing gets some history behind it, I think people are going to start to care about it. Right now, I get it. It's new. But, like, once like, who cares about – do you know who won the first NBA championship? I don't. I have no idea. No. I have no idea.
Fort Wayne, Minneapolis, something like that, right?
Nobody knows, right? Because nobody cares, right? In the beginning of the NBA, nobody cared about the NBA championship because it was brand new. And then when you got to the 80s, there was a history behind it, and people cared. I think that's what's going to happen here. Right now, it's going to be brutal, but I think people will care about it. Just give it time. Just give it time. Don't abandon this. Don't abandon this NBA. Like you abandoned the little all-star game thing way too early, I think. You know, like the whole pick your own squad thing. Like I was like, what are we doing? I get the traditionalists who want to keep West versus East, but like it was kind of interesting there for a second. Like, why not keep it going? And like when you abandon good ideas so quickly, you're not going to give it any time to ruminate, I think. And I think this is one where I'm like, I feel like they're using the in-season tournament as a test balloon. Don't. This is the way it's going to be from now on. Lay the hammer down. This is it. What was it? TV partners, teams, all you guys, get used to this. That this is the way we're going to be from now on, and then it becomes meaningful after 10 or so years. But it's fine. I'm okay waiting on it. Thank you so much for coming on, Michael. I know I rambled there at the end, but I am passionate about this in-season tournament.
I was going to say, who would think we go from Rockets observations to in-season tournament defense there? I like it.
You know what it is? I grew up as a Rockets fan, and like for the longest time, the only thing that mattered was the title. And if you didn't win the title, that's it. Nothing matters, right? Like that's how the NBA is. Like if you don't win the title, we don't even celebrate making the playoffs in the NBA or getting past the first round. Like we're just starting to celebrate getting to the NBA finals. I'm glad, very happy about that. Very pro, Western Conference, Eastern Conference, MVP, all that stuff. Sure. Very happy that there's some pageantry there now, but let's make this stuff meaningful, right? Let's make more stuff meaningful. You should be able to be a good team in the NBA and not just have one thing matter. More things should matter.
I love it. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on, Michael. Tell the people where they can find your work and read you on social media.
Yeah, for sure. So you can find all of my work on cron.com, and you can get all that content for free. As always, all of our sports content on cron.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at mshap2. I'll have Rockets coverage all season for y'all. So, thanks so much for having me on. Really appreciate it, man.
I'll talk to you down the road.
Awesome. Thanks.